The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
You know, every day it's oil, oil, oil. I mean, that's all they talk about.
But it seems lately
it's been a more positive light. What's interesting, though, is that earlier in the year when oil went down, the market went down.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, oil went down, the market went up. So we thought we'd bring back our expert. We have an expert that we really love. This guy is very, very bright. If you want to follow him, he is the editor of the Shork Report. Now, let me spell that for you. S-C-H-O-R-K, the Shork Report, which they do fundamental and technical analysis of the energy markets. We are pleased this morning to have Mr. Stephen Shork with us. He was formerly a proprietary floor trader on the New York Mercantile Exchange's energy complex. He has more than 17 years' experience in the physical commodities of oil and gas, and as far as we're concerned, is the expert on what's going on in the oil industry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, you know, with the markets, because as I mentioned in the opening here, last week, oil goes down, markets go down. But yesterday, a little different. Oil went down, markets went up. What's going on here?
All sorts of confusion now in the market. On Friday last week, we had a tremendous run higher. Now, mind you, it was after a significant one-week lower run. So even though we rallied more than 12% on Friday, we still closed the week lower. Now, why did we rally? Well, it was on rumors that, quote-unquote, OPEC is getting ready to work together to bring barrels off of the market. So you had that rumor coupled with the fact that we were going into a long holiday weekend in the U.S., and prices rocketed higher. But what happened when we all came back on Tuesday, OPEC did meet some of the members, that is, the key members, Saudi Arabia, and the best they could come up with is, we're going to freeze production. Well, they were already producing too much oil as it is. So the fact that Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Russia have decided to freeze production, they're freezing production at very high levels.
Right.
So the market did a complete U-turn. Everyone, well, not everyone, because I'm certainly still bearish, but the market certainly rocketed higher, but then corrected lower through yesterday.
All right. So you kind of slipped that in there. You're still bearish. Why are you still bearish on oil?
You cannot get bullish on oil at this point. In the here and the now, we are entering the turnaround season. So this is when refiners are boiling the fewest amount of barrels because they're getting ready for the summer. But if we look at the summer, we look at the month of July, when refineries are burning 95-96% at capacity, therefore crude oil demand is strongest in July. It's at one of its weakest points in October. And yet, when we look at the price for oil in July against prices for oil in October, the July month, the peak demand month, is trading at better than a $2 discount to the October market when oil demand is at its weakest. And then if you look at July 2017, it's the same situation. Oil delivered two summers hence is trading at a significant discount to oil delivered in the fall. So that situation is called a contango on the forward curve. Now, when that contango is established, and if that contango continues to grow, that means I've got so much supply, I don't have enough demand, I need to continue to discount. Think of the retailer. He's got too much inventory there in the warehouse. He's got to cut his prices in the storefront to get the product off of his shelves just to get rid of the inventory. He doesn't have enough demand. It's the same situation in the oil market. So until I start to see that situation where my retailer, my grocery guy, does not have to discount my oil on the shelf, I'm going to remain bearish, because as long as that contango persists, and if that contango continues to grow, that is the clearest signal out there that there is too much supply, not enough demand. It is a bearish, bearish, bearish fundamental.
Okay. Now, I heard somebody make a comment, but I didn't hear the whole interview, so maybe you can explain this to me. I heard somebody make a comment the other day that that we would be seeing higher prices at the pump even though we have lower prices on a per barrel basis, that we're going to see higher prices at the gasoline pump. What's going to happen here? Why is that going to take place?
Well, it's all relative. What is your definition, guys, of high prices right now? Because right now, oil in the month of February is trading in some market areas well below $2 a gallon. Now, what's going to happen in March? Well, the blending requirements, the EPA-mandated blending requirements, are going to lower the vapor pressure of my gasoline. So I have to acquire and blend different types of petrochemical feedstocks to make my gasoline in March. Those feedstocks are more expensive than the winter feedstocks. So prices are going to move higher next month. And okay. What's going to happen in April? It's the same situation because the vapor pressure is even lower. This is your so-called summer-grade gasoline. So that said, prices will begin to rise, guys, over the next couple of months, but they're only rising because of the petrochemicals that are required to blend that gasoline. But we're not talking about any sort of egregious rally here. So consumers are going to be paying considerably less at the pump they did this summer than they did last summer and certainly two summers ago.
Is there an historical, like, is it going to be a 10% rise, a 15%? Is there a percentage number that usually goes into these calculations?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And let's just keep the numbers nice and round, and let's say nationwide the average price of gasoline, AAA, is $2 a gallon right now.
Right. Uh-huh.
$2.50 maybe over the summer at these rates.
Well, that's a pretty steep increase, right?
So that is again along the lines, and you think about what we're seeing here with again the price elasticity of demand. That is $2 gallon gasoline is going to spur and has spurred a lot of extra demand in the market because to the consumer, gasoline is quote unquote cheap, so they're not going to conserve as they were 3 summers ago, 4 summers ago, when gasoline was $4 a gallon. So you're going to see that extra demand in the market. But from a historical, if you look at summer prices year in, year out, $2.50 is a fraction of what we were paying just 5 years ago.
Okay. All right. Interesting. That's really, really interesting.
Stephen, I have a question. Now, we've had a couple of people on the show lately or heard, you know, seen articles that have indicated that they think that oil is about to bottom or has bottomed and that we should be back in the 50s, maybe 50, 52, by the end of the year. What do you think about that?
Let's see. I'll throw my chicken bones down on the ground
okay.
now, and I'll make a wild prediction out here. Maybe. But let's keep in mind that we are still producing too much oil, both here in North America and around the globe. We also have this situation where Saudi Arabia and Iran are not going to settle 14 centuries worth of hatred towards one another and come to the table and start cutting production and pulling oil off the world market. Not going to happen. So we are looking at a situation where the global market is going to remain glutted. The North American market is going to remain glutted. Can we get back to $50? Absolutely. Is it likely? I'm skeptical at this point simply because I don't see supply falling well enough to compensate for the lack of growth or significant growth in demand. That is to say, we're going to remain well supplied. Hard to see this market doubling between now and December.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Iran came out and said it was illogical to freeze the production of oil. Of course, they're trying to get as much money as possible. So it's an interesting situation. Stephen, you'll stay with us. I have a couple more questions to ask you. We've got a great show for you today, folks. We've got Stephen Shork, the editor of the Shork Report. We'll be back in just a few moments. Stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have with us, we think, the world's foremost energy expert. We've got Mr. Stephen Shork, editor of the Shork Report. And Stephen, why don't we do a little commercial for the Shork Report? Tell them about the Shork Report, if they can get how they get access to it, how they can connect with you.
I appreciate that opportunity. It is Shork, and it's S-C-H-O-R-K. And if you just go to energymarketintelligence.com, shorkreportenergymarketintelligence.com or simply shorkreport.com. We'll bring it to the website, and we've been providing fundamental analysis and quantitative analysis of the energy markets for the last 11 years. I've been in the industry for over 25 years, i.e. since the first Gulf War in 1990. So we've gotten to see lots of volatility. And I developed a letter just for my own trading. I'm still a trader, and I used the letter myself for my own investment decisions in this sector. And I did this because 11 years ago, I needed help. I looked at the bigger guys, the big macro guys, who are all fantastic, giving you a 50,000-foot view of the market, and they are right 3, 4, 5 years down the road, but I needed as a trader to make profits month in, month out. So I hence created this report for myself, and it's been made available to the public for the last 11 years.
Now, I know you trade the commodities. Do you ever trade oil and gas stocks also?
I do not. I do not. I do not have the bandwidth. I like commodities, the price, because it's very simple. It's, you have to know supply, you have to know demand, and you can ascertain which way prices are going. I don't get into the minutia of individual companies. But what I would say is what I do like to have exposure to on the MLP side is the downstream side and the midstream side. These are the guys that are transporting products. These are the guys manufacturing products. So if you're a refinery, if you could buy $30 oil and turn around and sell $50 gasoline, you're making a pretty good profit. So that's where I'd like exposure to.
Yeah, in fact, they are. Yeah, you're right. They say the refineries are making a killing right now.
And, absolutely. They have been, and they will continue to make a killing. Because as we said before, guys, with that demand at $2 a gallon, demand for gasoline is very strong. So you know what? You also want exposure to the midstream, the guys who own the pipelines that take that gasoline from the refinery to the wholesaler rack or to the retailer. You want transportation because the demand is strong. Of course, where you don't want exposure mainly is on the upstream. These are the E&Ps. While there is money to be made, and a lot of E&Ps can make money in certain plays at oil at $25 a barrel, you have to know where you're going and pick your spots, and that is not for the faint of heart.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been a lot of activity this morning and yesterday and actually over the last week or so of big investors buying the midstream. Midstream is a real favorite of ours. Now, I asked you during the break if this was different this time, because there have been a lot of ups and downs in the oil industry. We were low back in 2008, for instance. And so you had some really great comments, because apparently the situation is a little different this time than in previous pullbacks in oil.
Right, and I never like to say this time is different. No one ever wants to,
right,
because it rarely ever is. So it's not different in the sense that oil, as with every industrial commodity, ebbs and flows with the health of the economy. So the fact that we've gotten a pullback in oil prices, in all industrial metal prices for that matter, is a clear telltale that something is not right globally with the economies. So that's the same as it always has been. The difference are now we have two factors. First and foremost, we have the chasm between the Sunni side of OPEC and the Shia side of OPEC. The only other time we've seen it bad was back in the mid-1980s when Saddam Hussein in Iraq invaded Iran, and you went into that 8-year war during the 80s, which eventually drove oil prices to below $10 a barrel. We're back to the mid-1980s, but the stakes are much higher, and it's much different this time, because now that the United States has given its imprimatur to an Iranian nuclear arsenal, and you're looking at a 1,400-year split between the Sunnis and the Shias, and now you're looking at a situation where Iran, at some point with nuclear power, is going to further expand its hegemonic designs on the Middle East and beyond, it's different. So in essence, Saudi Arabia, yes, they're concerned about $25 barrel oil, but they're also concerned about a nuclear Iran. So they're akin to the same situation that Great Britain was in 1939. So you cannot just look at price and say the Saudis is going to cut, because this is economics, this is geopolitics, this is theology. So that point is absolutely different today. The second point is we finally have the second factor, which changes consumer behavior. That is elasticity of demand. You need two factors to push prices to change consumer behavior. You need a price shock, which we've certainly had in the energy sector since the early 1970s. But up until the past 5 years, we've never had the second variable, and that is a substitute. So 10 years ago, driving down, or 15 years ago, driving down Putnam Avenue in Greenwich, Connecticut, your status car was the Suburban. It was the Humvee, cars right. that were getting 100 yards to the gallon. Today, you drive down Greenwich Avenue, and your status car is the what? The Tesla. So right. now you have electric motors, you have hybrids, you have clean diesel, you have plenty of substitutes. So that said, the inelasticity of demand for gasoline has weakened over the past few years. So those demand factors have absolutely changed. So your two factors, one factor, well, the one thing is it's the same because oil markets ebb and flow with economies. But the two factors that have changed is the growing chasm between the Sunni Shia side of OPEC and the impact of substitutes on inelasticity of demand for gasoline.
Okay, I want to ask you quickly about the fact that it looks like we're going to start exporting natural gas. I know Cheniere, I guess they're still running through their test of their plant. Enterprise is building the second one. Is this going to be a game changer for the natural gas business?
It's certainly going to have an impact, but it's certainly not going to be the game changer that everyone was envisioning 5 years ago. Keep in mind that we still have a lot of infrastructure issues. And again, from an investment standpoint, you want MLPs that have infrastructure exposure to the natural gas market. And that is to say, you want exposure to companies that are building and getting gas out of the Marcellus in western Pennsylvania and out of the Utica Shale in eastern Ohio. That is now the epicenter of the North American natural gas market. So exports, I love exports growing into Canada via a pipe because it's nice and cheap and it's abundant. Same situation, exports to Mexico via pipes because it's cheap and it's abundant. I don't like exports via LNG because why? The competition is a lot harder. I have to compete with Iran. I have to compete with Qatar. I have to compete with Australia, so forth. Players that are in this market have been doing it for a lot longer. So your competition from an LNG standpoint is much harder than it is from shipping it to my neighbors to the north and to my neighbors to the south.
Okay, so it's not going to be quite the game changer everybody thought.
I don't
Now, the
so.
Demand for oil and gas, because we have 81 new people on the planet every year, I assume that the increasing demand for oil and gas will eventually come from China, India, and the emerging markets. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that is also why I still remain bearish on oil for this year, because we're, to your point, the demand growth. So now we have the reintroduction of post-sanction oil coming in from Iran. We have Saudi Arabia competing with that. Where are they competing? They're competing for market share in Asia. So now China has spent the better part of the last 2 years exporting its deflation because clearly something is wrong with the Chinese economy. Same situation in Japan where they're flirting with their fifth recession since 2008. So that's where the demand growth is, but something is wrong with your two major economies over there, and we are continuing to put oil in the market. Hence why, too much supply, not enough demand.
Stephen, thank you so much for being with
Great
us today. Stephen,
great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.